So you mentioned what's happening with North Korea, South Korea, and it was interesting to me, Dr. Albert, that President Trump has agreed to meet with the North Korean leader, which I agree with you. I always thought it was a good idea, to be honest. I understand the whole notion of, you know, we don't want to legitimize a government that we see as not being legitimate. I definitely understand that. I was always thinking maybe we could get further, though, by talking with them and reaching some kind of agreement, negotiating something. So I'm really encouraged by the fact that President Trump's going to meet with him. But at the same time that I was kind of encouraged by that, I was intrigued, maybe even a little baffled by the fact that he's backing away from the policy that President Obama put in place with regards to our relation with Cuba.
Yeah, he's doing this with Cuba and with Iran, actually. So yeah. President Obama had a closening of relationships between the United States and Iran, and with the United States and Cuba, and, you know, released or loosened travel restrictions in the case of Cuba, tried to start some trade relations with Cuba. And with Iran, of course, we had the nuclear deal that many in the international arena viewed as a significant event. Yeah. And President Trump has disavowed both of those. He might later this month or in May pull out completely from the Iranian accords for their nuclear peace deal. And with Cuba, you know, he's tightened back our travel restrictions and doesn't want to recognize the Castro regime. Some of this is playing into the base, the politics of the Republican Party that wants to undo everything that President Obama did in the first place. And this is natural politics if you're of a different political allegiance than the predecessor, you want to undo what they just did because you want to take away their legacy.
Yeah.
Some of that is natural. In the case of, I mean, this is hotly contested in academia and in foreign policy arenas from policymakers themselves. It goes back to what we were talking about with President Kim. Do you want to legitimize the Cuban regime? We don't recognize Cuba as being a legitimate regime. We view them as an illegitimate regime that overthrew its proper government. You know, was it 58 or 59? You know, that's what brought Castro to power. Right. And we don't want to legitimize him. So we've had sanctions on him, you know, this entire time. The same goes with Iran. You know, we don't recognize the government of Iran that took power from the Iranian Revolution in 1979. That we do not recognize them. We do not have formal communications with these governments because we don't recognize them as legitimate. So that it's a cost-benefit analysis. Things haven't been going well with us in Iran. Maybe it's time to talk and stabilize and normalize the negotiations between the two countries, the relationship between the two countries. Things haven't been going well with Cuba since before Kennedy.
Yeah.
So, or during the Kennedy administration. So while we have to understand and have a preponderance of caution about legitimizing those what we call rogue regimes, dirty states, you know, those that we can't say are normalized in the international community, because we don't want to encourage, you know, a domino effect where other actors become rogue states, rebel from their governments or engage in hostile regime takeovers and change the status of the regime. So you don't want to legitimize them. So that's America's grand strategy, is not to legitimize this type of thing, because if you do that, you encourage that to happen. We don't want that to happen in the United States, right? So we don't want to recognize the independence of these groups that do this in their countries, because reciprocity applies in international relations. If some regime took over Washington for a while, we had some type of coup, we would not want the international community to recognize them as the legitimate governing authority of the United States. And so we try not to do that to other countries. If we start to negotiate, that legitimizes it and may encourage that type of further behavior from other participants, especially from smaller, you know, ethnic enclaves worldwide, you know, like the Basque in Spain, mm-hmm. or, you know, the Chechens in Russia, the Palestinians in Israel. You know, you don't want them to break away and try to have their own states, because that creates civil wars, ethnic civil wars, which are the nastiest type of wars that we've faced in the last century and into this one as well. President Obama said, no, I understand why that's problematic, but things have been bad. Nothing's working. Not recognizing them hasn't been working. The situation's getting worse. The Cuban population is suffering. Yeah. Their community in America is suffering. They want to help their family still in Cuba, the same with Iran. So let's try to take a soft step towards normalizing conditions and relationships between two countries in each bilateral set of countries there and make it better and very cautiously start talking to them in low levels of politics, in the case of Cuba, in very high levels of politics when we're talking about nuclear nonproliferation situations with Iran, and bring everybody in. You know, maybe if we normalize them, they'll play nice with us. Maybe if we reach out to them and say, hey, it's okay, we know things have been bad in the past, let's make it better, go, you know, we construct a positive relationship in the future, maybe that'll secure the situation. We won't have to worry about any negative catastrophic effects from either of those regimes.
And no question is, we can't expect what has been a rocky relationship for decades to turn good overnight. But like President Obama was saying, let's take some steps. And even though President Trump was saying Iran is not living up to their agreement with regards to nuclear weapons, the evidence seem to say they are living up to the agreement.
It's tricky in Iran's case. So they're living according to the letter of the law, but not the spirit of the law. So they're doing things that suggest that although they're not breaking anything formal in the treaty, they're doing everything possible that treads that fuzzy area, that gray area where they can't be accused of breaking the treaty, but that clearly demonstrates that they're doing shady actions that, you know, kind of cross that cusp of are you breaking the treaty or not? So the evidence that we have suggests that they're playing around with things that shouldn't be messed around with. You know, like when your parents give you rules and you're like, okay, I'll obey precisely those rules, but I'm going to step out of areas and things that you did not specifically spell out for me. Yeah. You know they're wrong. Mm-hmm. But they're not precisely against you right now in this area. So that's what Iran is doing. They're obeying by the letter of the law, but not the spirit. They're doing what they can to get away with things that they can get away with. And President Trump says it was an unfair deal to the United States in the first place. It doesn't protect Iran from getting nuclear weapons in the next 25 years. It only stalls it in that time. So he wants a better deal.
And is he working in unison with other countries, or is he basically going it alone?
Well, the major reason for the Macron visit, the French president to the United States, President Trump's first official state visit was for the French President Macron, was two major issues, and that was what to do about Iran and the Paris Climate Accords. President Macron has said pretty clearly that he was unable to change President Trump's opinion on either of those situations. But what Macron did was encourage President Trump to stay in the nuclear deal with Iran until that, and at the same time or simultaneously create a better deal that would disallow Iran from ever getting nuclear weapons. So Trump says, we're going to pull out. We'll come back to the negotiation with a better deal that forestalls forever the possibility of Iran from getting nuclear weapons. Macron says that doesn't, okay, I hear you. We want that too. Nobody wants a nuclear weaponized Iran. But the way to do that is to stay in the protocol we have now and continue to work towards tightening those restrictions further within the current parameters of the nuclear treaty we have right now. President Trump says, no, that's not how negotiation works. That's not in the art of the deal that I wrote. That's not how I became a billionaire. I'm not doing that. And Macron was very respectfully said, you know, this isn't business. This is international politics. And, you know, it's an establishment that we have certain protocols and regimes and institutions that have worked, you know, pretty much since 1648 in a way to guarantee that this is how multilateral negotiations take place. And President Trump says, don't talk about the establishment to me. If it's not benefiting the way I envision the United States, then that's not what we're going to do, regardless of what it means for the international community. And so President Macron, you know, pretty much has taken place of Great Britain as our number one ally right now. And Macron is using that relationship with Trump to try to say, yes, we want France first, too. We know you want America first. But, you know, America is going to be secure if Iran is secure. And the only way to make them secure is to make them feel secure, which means you can't pull out of this treaty. So it's a tough relationship right now for everybody to show Donald Trump, to help him understand that sometimes you help yourself by helping others. Yeah. Trump doesn't have that understanding because that's not the way the business world works. Mm-hmm. In the business world, you can take over another, you know, company, destroy it, you can merge it, fire all its people, and it doesn't matter. Like, you win. You know, if you fire other people in international negotiations, that means war.
I guess, Dr. Craig Alvin and I, coming back in just a few.